The Midweek Review. The Columbia Broadcasting System presents its Washington news analyst, Albert Warner, to report and review the highlights in the news from the nation's capital. Here is Mr. Warner.
The president has spoken. The isolationists in the Senate have responded. They say no, and they say it loudly. The battle is on. Neither the president's argument nor the restraint which characterized his speech converted or restrained his opposition in the Senate. They met together before he addressed the opening of the special session of Congress today. They met after it. They were not changed. National unity may be the slogan of the president and also of his opponents, but a bitter clash to determine on what course we shall be unified became inevitable tonight. As you know, the president pleaded with Congress to repeal the arms embargo, which now prevents the shipment of arms to belligerent countries. On that point, he said, go back to international law, which bans no trade. Then he suggested either legislative or executive action to lessen the possibility of international incidents. He showed his willingness to accept the cash and carry plan, by which warring nations would have to put up cash for all goods they buy here and carry them away in their own ships. For the president also voiced approval of the creation of a danger zone into which American vessels would not be permitted to go. Mr. Roosevelt further proposed continuation of the ban on American travel in belligerent vessels and of war loans to the fighting countries. And again, Mr. Roosevelt stressed the objective of keeping America out of war. Let no group assume the exclusive label of the peace bloc. We all belong to it, said the president. But the essence of his program, the milk of the coconut, as Senator Bob La Follette described it, was the repeal of the arms embargo. On that issue, the fight is made, the challenge accepted. The conflict outside the halls of Congress reached into the Capitol today to touch the struggle there. 300 men and women with American flags massed in the rotunda of the Capitol. They shouted as senators walked by to the joint session, keep us out of war. No blood money. Don't repeal the arms embargo. They represented the Philadelphia Committee for Defense of Constitutional Rights. One group had trouble getting into the Capitol. Representative Patrick tried to find out what the matter was. Who are you? Said one woman visitor. Are you a communist? You look like one. Patrick said he was just a congressman. Then another woman shouted, why should our boys be sent to war? This afternoon, as soon as the joint session of Congress was adjourned, the opposition in the Senate held its second organizational meeting. The number of conferees increased in the afternoon. There were altogether 24 different senators, Democrats, Republicans, two former laborites, and one progressive enlisted in the fight against repeal of the arms embargo. Seven more senators, unable to attend today, raised their number to 31. The lineup tonight stood as follows. 47 senators in favor of the president's entire program, 31 opposed, 18 doubtful. The isolationists think they are within striking distance of a block of 40 senators. In any case, 33 are enough to block cloture. It takes two-thirds of the Senate to limit debate. The opposition is now assured of sufficient strength to prevent any such move. There was no threat of filibuster. In fact, the opposition is anxious to deny any such intent. Just full, thorough, complete discussion, all the facts, all the history, perhaps all the incidents which led to American involvement in the World War in 1917. That's all they want. But by the time the fight is completed, the friends of the administration may be saying that the difference between filibustering and free discussion is mighty hard to define. So determined was the group of isolationists which met today that it was decided to set up a permanent organization. A strategy board of five members may be named, including perhaps men outside the Senate. Speeches will be made throughout the country. Veterans of the World War may be enlisted for the oratorical battle. There was even discussion of a publicity set up for the oppositionists. And although secrecy was preserved over some of the plans, word leaked out that one of the wealthiest men in the country, a well-known figure, had sent word through one of the senators that he was prepared to finance expenditures for organization on a nationwide basis. The meeting of this Senate Battalion of Death was held in the catacombs of the Capitol. Down in that unique room in the basement occupied by the veteran Senator Hiram Johnson, the California Republican. Today, Senator Johnson tossed 5 or 10 years off his age, flourished his yellow cigar holder, and with fire in his eyes, presided at the latest rally of the isolationists. When at last his conference broke up, he looked around fondly at his table and desk and the other furnishings of his office and told us newsmen it was right in this room that the fate of the League of Nations was decided. Another League of Nations fight, and two veterans of that fateful struggle here to lead the latest battle, Johnson and Borah. Of course, some people say that it was the defeat of the League which helped to bring on the international anarchy which has resulted in the latest war in Europe. But others will tell you that the Senate decision on the League kept the United States out of a series of controversies, and that the fight against the arms embargo is a continuing part of this struggle to keep this nation out of involvement abroad. Johnson and Borah are joined by the son of another isolationist of World War days, young Bob La Follette, and by the grandson of a leader in the fight against the League of Nations. Young Senator Lodge of Massachusetts took a hand in the organization work today. The fight has split parties and smashed all previous alignments. Most of the conservative Democrats have gone back to the president, energetically supporting his program for repeal of the embargo. But now, the so-called left-wingers are against the president, the progressive La Follette, the farmer laborites, Lundeen and Shipstead of Minnesota, the agrarian progressives like Frazier and Nye of North Dakota, Democratic Wheeler of Montana, once the running mate of the elder La Follette, is in the opposition also. The isolationist group includes the following Democrats: Clark of Missouri and Clark of Idaho, McCarran, Bulow, Walsh, Holt, Overton, and Downey. Those last two were rather surprising. Overton of Louisiana has usually been with the administration. That's been the position also of Downey of California, apostle of bigger and better old age pensions. George Creel, a Democratic leader of California, the official information chief during the World War, recently visited the White House. He came out wholeheartedly for repeal of the embargo and said there were no isolationists left in the West. It seems that there are at least two, and they have votes. The two senators from his own state, Downey and Johnson, are ranged against the president. Republicans at the isolationist meeting today included Vandenberg, Barber, Gurney, Kappa, Toby, Danaher, Reed, and Bridges, besides those already mentioned. Old alliances have been broken overnight. Again and again, the president has consulted Senator La Follette. This is the first really major issue on which they have split. As he left the isolationist meeting, La Follette said, "The embargo repeal is the issue, and we are absolutely opposed to it. I am convinced this fight can be won. I am satisfied public opinion is with us." The administration, he said, has been painting its picture of success in much too rosy hue. From the Atlantic to the Pacific, every senator is being swamped by mail. Most of it is against repeal of the embargo, he said. And La Follette added that 96% of his mail was against changing the embargo. It seemed to come from every people in every walk of life. If it was propaganda, he said, he had never seen anything just like it before. Now that huge mail, by the way, is a very real factor in this fight. Many congressmen say it does not represent the sentiment in their districts. But whether it comes from the spur of one or two organizations remains to be seen. The isolationists had no particular criticism of the cash and carry plan. On the contrary, they like it, but they don't want it as a substitute for the arms embargo. For they argue that the repeal of the embargo would be showing favoritism to one side, they mean Britain and France. It would make the United States an arsenal and build up a commercial interest leading toward involvement, so they argue. Senator Vandenberg said, "I continue to disagree that the president recommends the safer non-involvement formula. So far as general international law is concerned, that's the precise code that got us into the last war." That's the oppositionist side. The administration forces also are organized, and they rolled toward the battle with as much speed and with more immediate strength. The President counts definitely upon the support of the House, which will await Senate action. And in the Senate, by the admission of even the isolationists, the administration starts with the upper hand. The bulk of the Democrats remain behind the President in his appeal for ending the arms embargo. A group of Republicans has also bolted to the administration position. While the isolationists were meeting in Senator Johnson's office, high administration strategy was mapped at the White House. The Senate Majority Leader, Mr. Barkley, big, broad-shouldered Minton of Indiana, the Democratic whip, and shrewd Senator Burns of South Carolina, the big three of the administration Senate Strategy Board, conferred with the President. Senator Barkley said later, "We have decided to take the House neutrality bill as a basis for legislation because that is in the interest of speed." The senator said he is calling a meeting of the Democratic Steering and Policy Committee for tomorrow morning to discuss legislative procedure. Effort would be made to follow the President's proposal and limit the session to neutrality, said Barkley. "Practically all the opinion that came to me today is in favor of thus limiting the session," he declared. And while the President lost Senator La Follette, he welcomed back to his ranks the Democratic conservatives, even some of those senators who have been on the suspect list as economic Tories. It was that unreconstructed rebel, Carter Glass of Virginia, who swept his colleagues at the last session into a violent rebuff of the White House for the appointment of a federal judge obnoxious to the senator. And on many issues, Senator Glass, drawling out barbed words from the corner of his mouth, has castigated New Deal policies. But this afternoon, he was at the White House, and of the President's message, he said, "It was fine, pungent, and conclusive to my point of view, and I don't see how anybody can take any other point of view." Senator George of Georgia, who was on the President's purge list in the primary a year ago, made no commitment, but he called Mr. Roosevelt's address a very strong plea. Senator Byrd of Virginia has opposed most of the major policies of the administration, yet he said today that the President's plan was admirably presented. "The strictest sort of cash-and-carry policy, vigorously enforced, is, I think, our best safeguard," Senator Byrd declared. He was taken to mean that he would accept repeal of the arms embargo if the cash-and-carry policy were extended to all belligerent purchases in the United States. The President also drove a wedge into the Republicans. He took with him Senator Taft of Ohio, who is an outstanding candidate for the Republican presidential nomination. He had the support also of the assistant Republican leader of the Senate, Mr. Austin. Colonel Knox, who ran for vice president on the Republican ticket in 1936, said, "I thought it was one of the greatest speeches Roosevelt ever made in his whole career. I thoroughly approve of his proposals." And while the President lost the progressives and former laborites in the Senate, he kept the support of the ultra-New Dealers. Senator Lee of Oklahoma said it was a magnificent appeal from the heart of a great patriot. The administration's strategy is to make this a lightning war. No bombs and destruction, but speed and precision. The administration counts upon a majority now in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. That seems to be a safe reckoning. Hearings will not be allowed. That's on the premise everyone knows the issue and the argument. The strategy of the opposition is the long pull. Identify repeal of the arms embargo with war involvement and play on that theme throughout the country. National unity, yes, but a legislative battle royal before it is achieved. Yet, that is in accord with the democratic process, a process blacked out in so many other countries.
Albert Warner, CBS News analyst, has presented the Midweek Review, a report and a review of the highlights in the news from the nation's capital. Next Thursday at the same time, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, WJSV will again present Albert Warner. This is Columbia Station for the nation's capital.
10:45. Whether you spend a dime or a dollar, you want the most for your money. You get just that when you order National Bohemian Beer, the most expensive 10-cent beer your dealer can buy. It is sold by quality-minded dealers who are proud that National Bohemian, the most expensive 10-cent beer they can buy, is on their shelves. WJSV, Washington.